The Gospel is from Mark. John said to him, "Teacher, we saw someone casting out demons in your name, and we tried to stop him because he was not following us." But Jesus said, "Do not stop him, for one who does a deed of power in my name will be able to soon afterward to speak evil of me. Whoever is not against us is for us. For truly I tell you, whoever gives you a cup of water to drink because you bear the name of Christ will by no means lose the reward. If any of you put a stumbling block before one of these little ones who believes in me, it would be better for you if a great millstone were hung around your neck and you were thrown into the sea. If your hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. It is better for you to enter life maimed than to have two hands and to go to hell, to the unquenchable fire. And if your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off. It is better for you to enter life lame than to have two feet and to be thrown into hell. And if your eye causes you to stumble, tear it out. It is better for you to enter the kingdom of God with one eye than to have two eyes and to be thrown into hell, where their worm never dies and the fire is never quenched. For everyone will be salted with fire. Salt is good, but if salt has lost its saltiness, how can you season it? Have salt in yourself and be at peace with one another." The word of the Lord.
A few weeks ago, I came across a book that was interesting to me and challenging called Tales of a Magic Monastery, and I've shared one with you, and I thought, I'll share it again. You can ponder with me about these things. They're little short fables, parable-type things, and this one, the setup is, there's a guy, he's heard about this magic monastery, and in the magic monastery, there is a monk who's famous for his teaching, so this guy goes to him to gain some wisdom, and here's how their encounter goes. "Why not?" That was the first thing the monk said. He had never seen me before. I hadn't said a word. Why not? Before I go on with the parable, I want to ask you to think about that question for a minute. In your own life, why not? Well, the first thing you're going to be asking, well, why not what? Well, exactly. What is there in your life? And I know there's something you think about, something you've thought about repeatedly, that should change, that would be a change for the better in your life. What is that in your life? It might be, I wish I could be a better husband. I wish I could be a better child, a better brother or sister. I wish I could give more of my time for volunteer. It's got to be something that is positive, not just something that's frivolous, like, I wish I had a lot more money, or I wish I had a better car, I wish I had hair, or something like that. It's like, I wish, maybe it's something as simple as, I wish I could be a better person. I wish I could know or love God more. What is it in your life? "Why not?" was the first thing the monk said. He had never seen me before. I hadn't said a word. Why not? I knew he had me. I brought up my excuses. Well, my wife, the people I have to work with, not enough time. I guess it's just my temperament. There was a sword hanging on the wall. He took it and gave it to me. Here. With this sword, you can cut through any barrier. I took it and slipped away without saying a word. Back in my room in the guest house, I sat down and kept looking at that sword. I knew that what he had said was true. But the next day, I returned his sword. How can I live without my excuses? Could it be as simple as that? Could it be the main barrier to the change that we would like to see in our life, that God might want to see in our life, is simply our excuses? Could it be that simple? Why not? I love the disciples in this story today that we just heard read. I love them because they're at their most human, which means they're most like me. And boy, they're not looking very pretty in this story here today. They come to Jesus and they are so full of themselves. They're just so proud. They are trying so hard to impress Jesus. So they come up to him and say, "Jesus, Jesus, guess what? Guess what? Guess what we did today? We met this guy. And you know what he was doing? He was casting out demons in your name. And you know what we did? You know what we did, Jesus? We told him to stop it because he wasn't following us." Did you catch that? I quoted the last line of that story exactly. We told him to stop it because he wasn't following us. Wow. What pride. What control freaks. What arrogance. Thinking they were in charge of everything and they were the ones controlling who got to do anything with Jesus. I almost picture them as like junior high kids, you know, and Jesus is the popular kid in school, and everyone wants so hard to earn his favor. And they think the only way that they can exercise their privilege is to cut everyone else out of this. You're not following us. You're not part of the in-group. Go away. And instead of pleasing Jesus, he just shakes his head and he says, "Don't you get it? This guy is doing some good in the world. He is releasing people from whatever is possessing them. He's setting them free. You realize he can't do that if he weren't doing it in my name." And then he says this amazing line. He says, "You know, if somebody isn't against you, they just might be for you. They just might be on your side." How freeing, how opening is that? That's exactly the opposite way of the way we normally say it, right? We say, if they ain't for us, they're against us. And we live that out. How much of Christianity and religion in general is just lived on that level of saying, "You don't see things the way we do. We're right. You're wrong. Here is the dividing lines. Here's the doctrine that we must fight over. Here's the doctrine that we must even kill over." We see this dynamic going on every level, from the macro level, where we see Muslims in the Middle East talking to other Muslims and saying, "You're a different denomination, therefore we will kill you and destroy you and take over your territory." We see it right down to the micro level, right down to churches in our own community, where we hear people say, "We don't see eye to eye on the Lord's Supper, and therefore you are excluded from it." But Jesus just shakes his head and says, "No. If they're not against us, they just might be for us." And he says, look at it. There are people in this world, the little ones, as he calls them, who are trying to live out their faith, who are trying to do something pleasing to God. And sometimes, he says, the only thing they can figure out to do is offer a cup of cold water to someone in my name. And he said, instead of encouraging them and blessing them and joining with them in that ministry, you're stepping on them and trampling on them all over. Could the faith be boiled down to something as simple as giving a cup of cold water? Why not? This past week, the Pope came to town, so to speak, didn't he? It's been in all the news. People are just fascinated by this guy. The thing that fascinates me about him is he has this ability to simply take what are the most basic truths about our faith and cut to the chase and just put those out there. The things that should be most obvious to us, the things that we were taught in Sunday school when we were just grade school age, and yet he puts them out there and our minds are just blown and we think, who is this guy? Did he come down from outer space with some kind of new revelation? And it isn't that at all. You know, how hard is it to simply say, as he does, that we need to focus on the mercy of God? That is the most basic thing about God. That is why we fall in love with God. That's why we want to serve God. Instead, he says, you get caught up in all your arguments over gay marriage and abortion and divorce and whatever it is, he says, and lose your focus on mercy. He just is able to cut to the chase. This past week, a favorite meme, at least on my Facebook feed, was this. He says, first you pray for the poor, then you feed the poor. That's how you pray for the poor. And it's like, this isn't hard. But yet we act as if we'd never heard something like this because we're focused on theology and differences and denominations. Here's how this pope gets it. A couple years ago, when the last pope was still in office, I happened to be on watching TV on Monday, Thursday, and the pope always does a reenactment of Jesus washing people's feet. It's a wonderful gesture designed to show servanthood. But I was just struck by how the previous pope, I mean, he was elderly, he was not able to walk, but here's how they did it. They just did it all wrong. The people he was supposed to, they did it in St. Peter's, that big church in Rome there, which is massive. And the people that he was supposed to wash the feet were like a block away somewhere in the cathedral. And so the poor pope couldn't walk, which is understandable. But they had built a trolley for him with a brass rail, and they pushed him down the marble floors. And when he got there, he had all these gold robes on, and he couldn't wash feet with those. So he just held out his arms, and servants took the robes off before he could wash feet. And I thought, this is just all wrong. The symbolism of servanthood is just totally lost. Then this year, the new pope, Francis, when he, on Monday, Thursday, was going to reenact the foot washing, what did he do? He went to a prison, and he knelt at the feet of prisoners and washed their feet. How hard is this? The trouble is, when anyone calls us back to the most basic things of faith, the things where we just have to let go and let the love of God flow through us, we say, well, we can't deal with that. We have to have all the things that we think are important. And so, just as that poor guy who was exercising demons in the story today, Pope Francis gets pushed back. All sorts of people are saying he should shut up. He isn't speaking the truth. He's not one of us. At this point, I like to picture Jesus doing what that monk did in that story at the beginning of the sermon. He goes and he picks up a sword and he says, this will cut through any barriers, and he hands it to us, his followers, and he says, cut it out. Cut out all your pride and all your arrogance and all your power struggles and all your theological arguments, anything that's keeping you from showing the love and mercy of God, just cut it out. And I picture us, his followers, all too often looking at that sword and handing it back, trying to shove it back at Jesus and saying, no, no, how could we live without our excuses? And Jesus shoves the sword back at us and says, that's not the question. It's not a matter of how can you live without your excuses. It's a matter of how can the world live with all your excuses. All your excuses to be able to say, I'm right, you're wrong, you better shut up. And we don't stop there. All our excuses that say, I'm right, you're wrong, you better shut up, and if you don't, we're going to make you. Jesus hands us the sword and says, cut it out. No more excuses. And he reminds us, he invites us to actually believe that there is a world where if people aren't against us, they just might be for us. And that sometimes the most important and basic thing of all, as followers of Jesus, may simply be to give a cup of cold water to anybody who has the most basic human need. Could it be as simple as that? Why not?